to me. Oh!
Live from New York City, it's the Gary Knoll Show. And now, your host, Gary Knoll.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Knoll. Today, the link between sugary drinks and cancer. Sorbonne University Epidemiology and Statistic Research Center in France, published in the British Medical Journal. Wow. I'm going to send a copy of this over to Bob Kane, if he's still alive, because it was 40 years ago that Bob Kane on NBC, national NBC radio, invited me to be a debater with a professor at Harvard University, Elizabeth Whalen. She went on to, I believe, found the American, the American Council on Science and Health, a pro-industry group. And I brought the studies that I could find in the scientific literature on what was wrong with sugar in the amount that we were consuming. I even brought an article from the British Medical Journal. It was back in the early 1900s, 1903 to 1906, and it talked about the severe consequences of consuming sugar in the amounts they were consuming. I believe that amount back then was 6 pounds per year. When we had this debate, we were averaging about 140 pounds. Today it's over 160 pounds per year per person. Now, I don't consume any processed sugar, and many of you do not either. It means someone's consuming our percentage, which means the actual amount being consumed is a lot more. So she said that there were no problems, and I showed the science there was. And you know, with all these decades and all the proof that it's harmful, we're still consuming this amount of sugar. So here's a question, and later in the program, I'd like for you to call in on our talkback line and share your thoughts. Morbid obesity, that means when you can die from it, obesity, overweight, are the norm. More than half the American adult population is overweight. With that comes heart disease, high blood pressure, cancer, depression, arthritis, and premature aging due to inflammatory cytokines. We have done nothing, and when I say nothing, it's actually worse than nothing. It continues to increase every single year. So when we are presenting studies, why aren't we doing anything about it? Why isn't a course in every school in America starting about what we eat, we become, and therefore show the true biology of food and its relationship to ourselves and to our aging process? Why not? Why don't we have those courses? Even dietetics. Now, I'm a registered dietitian. I took the full courses and graduated and then had to do 1,200 hours of internship. I would never feed anyone the foods that the dietitians were taught to feed. That's how much they've captured the entire health industry. So even your dietitians were causing malnutrition from the foods they were giving patients in hospitals. 50,000 died in 1 year. But here's the larger, overarching question. It's not just sugar or meat or the amount of time we spend on social media. It's not our denial of our personal responsibility to make individual changes, irrespective of any changes the governments are making or not making, in our case, not making, when it comes to our responsibility towards the planet and towards trying to hold back global warming, which is not working. It's also a part of why are you still living in a place that is completely incapable of supporting a sustainable quality of life without fear, such as New Orleans. Are you aware that today the Mississippi is over its banks again It's over all the flood banks, and it's sweeping into communities, and these communities do not have water damage. Flood damage. They may have hurricane damage for wind and the rain that comes in from the wind, but it doesn't have flood damage. You're talking about Louisiana. You're talking about the entire coast of Mississippi. The entire coast is not allowing anyone on the beach because we not only have toxic algae in the water, and you could die by going in the water. That's true all over Florida also. But it's also in the air. And now you have a flesh-eating bacteria that's in the sand. You can't even walk on the beaches yet. Nobody will sell their house on the beach or the canals. And it's like watching someone walk to a death chamber on death row. And they're not aware that at the end of that walk, they're going to be strapped onto a gurney and injected and die. They've dismissed that. They have something else in their mind. But why? Why is it that we know that almost all politicians, with some exception, a handful of exceptions, are utterly emotionally incapable and spiritually lacking the moral balance to serve all the public's interests and not corporate and special interest? We know we shouldn't be putting our money into major banks, but rather credit unions. We know we shouldn't be buying things we cannot afford, but we do. We know we shouldn't be buying clothes that are made with slave labor from Bangladesh at 14 cents an hour, but we do. We have women who we say we're for you. Good. But we're not for you if you blame Bill Clinton. Then we're not for you. If you have a baby that was killed by a vaccine and can prove it, we're not for you. So we're not for 7 million women or 7 million parents who have vaccine-injured children. Then you're the enemy. Well, you're doing something wrong. The state should intervene. The state is right. We're not willing to take responsibility for the choices we make. Why? Should we pay people's health insurance when they intentionally and with absolute joy in their neglect create diseases that they could have prevented and then expect us, we the people, to pay for it? At what point do we hold someone responsible for the choices they make in their life? Or do we hold no one responsible for any choices ever? When I grew up, before grade school, I'd go out and play. Come back at lunch, come back out in the afternoon, come back at dinner, around sunset, play kick the can and hide and go seek, and then it was off to home. Today, parents are so fearful of the over-bureaucratic system where everyone is telling them what they must do or be punished. We have a prison system that does not redeem people, with the exceptions of those in it who are more progressive. We call people who are radically, let's say they have adulterated the principles of making proper choices. They are ideologues. So when a person looks at that person, they immediately equate them as being progressive. So progressive is a dirty word if you're a conservative. And yet those of us who are progressive one time were either conservative or liberal and still hold the best of those values but refuse to be corporatized, commodified, and blanderized in this giant mixing bowl. Why? Why are we not willing to make almost any appropriate choices to save the planet, to save our lives, to change a system? So I'm not talking about one individual thing like sugar. That's where we start. That's the first thread that we start to pull on. We're going to pull that whole thread and show that almost everything. The largest single expense in many schools today is not paying the teachers. They're underpaid. We're helping the students or giving them the tools they need and the teachers the freedom to show how to be critical thinkers and how to learn. Now it goes to administrators. What happens when we're afraid to speak in a free society for fear that someone will take our words and say, that's racist or that's sexist or that offends me or that's a trigger word? What happens when we can't have comedians today? We don't have, and they would not exist today, George Carlin, Lenny Bruce, Richard Pryor, Don Rinkles, Jonathan Winters, Sophie Tucker. We wouldn't have any of these who would be able to appear on any college campuses. What, are we afraid to laugh? Are we afraid that something we're laughing about will be perceived as offensive to some group or some individual, and suddenly they control all of our speech and how we should be living our lives? That's where we're at right now. It's not that it's coming. We're already there. So my question to you at the beginning of this program is why? What do you think is behind this, and where do you see this going? Remember, everything that picks up momentum goes someplace. What is the likely outcome? Our talkback number is 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. I share my thoughts and my commentaries, which I do generally about 3 times a week, in my special in-depth investigative reports, which I've been doing more than ever before, and documentaries, and my broadcasts. This is all about you and your thoughts. So when the calls come in, I'll take them. So now back to the Sorbonne. It says here that, according to the Sorbonne, that a study published just this week in the British Medical Journal reports a possible association between higher consumption of sugary drinks and an increased risk of cancer. Now, I don't care how people interpret this. This is not the only study. There are dozens of studies showing the susceptibility to cancer and sugar consumption. And we're consuming more sugary beverages today than ever before. We're not decreasing, we're increasing. So they took a look at that, and they found, after looking at 101,257 healthy French adults, and they had been consuming drinks of different types, the consumption, and there was a definite, statistically significant association with cancer. So, does this mean that we've warned the public, caveat emptor, consumer beware? Yes, we have, thousands of times. Why won't it change anything? And it won't. From the All Institute of Medical Science, published in the peer-reviewed journal Restorative Neurology and Neuroscience, they found that yoga can relieve physical and psychological symptoms associated with rheumatoid arthritis. Now, consider how many millions of Americans and people throughout the world suffer from arthritis, and yoga could make a big difference. That's according to this study. So, good. Yoga helps with arthritis. From the University of Aberdeen, talks about coenzyme Q10 and L-carnitine, that's C-A-R-N-I-T-I-N-E, and it can improve fertility. That's important, especially for those who want to have a planned pregnancy. Also, and most people are deficient in both of those, from King's College London, published in the peer-reviewed journal of Gerontology, blueberries can reduce cardiovascular disease risk by up to 20% just by themselves. Now, we know that exercise will reduce it, the omega-3 fatty acids will reduce it, and also de-stressing will reduce it, a plant-based diet reduces it, vitamin C reduces it. There are a lot of things reduce it, each having its own percentage, but if just blueberries alone can reduce congestive heart failure by, or cardiovascular disease by 20%, that's terrific. So get your blueberries. Here they're talking about 200 grams of blueberries, and they compared them to a group that got a blueberry tasting-looking drink that had no blueberries in it. Now, 200 grams at 20.65 grams to an ounce, you're dealing with about 6 ounces of blueberries. That's not a lot. You can throw those into a blender. Why? Because the blueberries are phenomenally rich in what are called antho, A-N-T-H-O, cyaninins, C-Y-A-N-I-N-S. And they have great fibers. They're really good for people who have diverticulitis, colitis, spastic colons, Crohn's disease, because it's a very soft fiber. It would be like the difference of, let's say, wheat fiber from bran and bean fiber from the lignocellulose and versus blueberry fiber. And that would also be true for raspberry and strawberry and cherry fiber, very soft. One would be taking a smooth cloth through the intestine. The other would be taking a cloth that had, let's say, exfoliating action. It would be a little rougher. They're both essential, but they both clean out that intestine, helping prevent inflammation, and also what comes from that is frequently polyps and precancerous and cancerous conditions. So get your blueberries. Also from South Korea, from the Sung Kwon University, Panax, that's P-A-N-A-X, ginseng, attenuates inflammation from gastritis. So meaning if, and this was published in the American Journal of Chinese Medicine. Now, I believe that the Panax is prepared from Korean red ginseng, and red ginseng is the most powerful of all ginsengs, and it has effective ingredients. Now, I've written many papers on ginsengs, and they contain chemicals that are strongly anti-inflammatory and strongly anti-cancer. They're called ginsenosides, and these ginsenosides are what turn off inflammation, and that's what helps protect you. And they also they have an inhibitory saponins, so that's also important. Also, there's one more study here in zinc, something most people don't think about, but zinc supplementation improves glycemic control for diabetics. So if you want to naturally manage your diabetes and help yourself, zinc, you don't have a lot, 15 milligrams a day, and this is from the Zhejiang University of Medicine. So get your ginseng, or excuse me, get your zinc every day. Oh, one last thing. The University of Salford, which is the United Kingdom, did what they considered groundbreaking new research showing vitamin C's ability to target cancer stem cells and stop their growth. That is important because increasingly researchers are discovering the role played by cancer stem cells in the growth and spread of the disease. So you can kill off the non-stem cell cancers, but as long as the stem cells, it's going to rejuvenate the cancer. Hence, this prevents the reoccurrence of tumors. And we were doing this at the Tri-State Healing Center, which about 4,000 to 5,000 of you were treated at back in the 1980s and 90s. Do you remember coming over to the brownstone that I had on 84th Street, right off Riverside Drive? And we had about, well, we had a homeopath, Dr. Ken Corns, Dr. Calopy, nurses doing the homeopathics. It was great to see people come in with serious conditions and 3, 4, 5, 6 months later improve. From there, we moved down to larger space at 72nd and Broadway. We were there for a long time. Helped a lot of people. So vitamin C was what got you back your health. So we were ahead of this curve. Now, I did not know at that time. We didn't have the science at that time to know that the high doses of vitamin C were killing the stem cells of cancer, but they were. So remember, cancer stem cells are responsible for triggering tumor reoccurrence and promoting their growth and metastasis. So if we can kill the stem cells, and vitamin C at high doses does that, and the key is high doses. In fact, that this study showed that vitamin C works 10 times better than the experimental drug 2-DG. So that's being way ahead of the curve there. So that's the latest on health and healing. Our talkback number is 888-874-4888. Please feel free to call. We'd like to hear from you. Oh, I was just told that Bob Kane died in 2014. He was a really good broadcaster, and he was very fair. And I'm sorry that he passed. But in any case, I don't know if we have that in our archives or not, but if we do, I think you'd find it an interesting debate. I did, I'm guessing, somewhere over 150 to 200 debates back in from 1970 to 1990, because nobody else wanted to go out there and debate. You know, I'd get a call, well, we tried this doctor and that doctor and this person. They did. Why not? Well, if you lose a debate, it makes you look bad. I said, I don't care about looking bad. I just care about sharing the right information. So he was always open. Now, we're going to take a break, and when we come back, I want you to hear this. This is Dr. Peter Goetze. We had him on yesterday talking about how, after a long career in medicine, very distinguished career, he now looks at the pharmaceutical industry control over medical curriculums, buying off professors at universities, spending lavishly on university departments, buying up physicians who are top in their field. So when you look around, you don't realize how many people are controlled. Interesting, because in the trial of the chiropractics that the chiropractors won, and there's an unsung hero in all this. His name is Joe Lisa. I haven't heard from Joe in 30 years. But Joe and I both got the same packages. Turns out we got identical packages, anonymous packages, and in that were documents proving that the AMA was running a criminal operation in violation, and it was found to be true, the Sherman Antitrust Act and restraint of trade and destroying all alternative therapies. And we saw that I wrote an article. In fact, Ralph Nader and I were writing for Caveat Emptor, Consumer Beware, and that was way back in the early 70s, and that's up online. That's in our archives. You ought to go back and read that article. And then 10 years later, or thereabouts, I did another two articles on how the AMA was trying to destroy chiropractic, and then the documents got into the hands. We put it in a lot of people's hands. Lawsuits were filed by five chiropractors, and they won. They sued the 12 largest medical organizations in America, and they won. And because of that, it saved the entire profession of chiropractic. They couldn't get insurance. They were called unscientific. They were called pseudoscience, and they were called charlatans, and they were called a cult. They were given no credit. They weren't allowed in science classes. I mean, the condemnation by the AMA and its control over all the medicine, state medical boards and curriculums and accreditation, meant that nobody could go against them. And they did, and they won. And because of that, this is just a little aside. I was asked, I said, my Asian colleague said, I know you're going out to L.A. Can you stop off in Las Vegas to do a lecture? I said, sure. Who is it? Well, just some group of health promoters, and they just want to hear your views on where we're going to go from here in the world on health. I said, fine. So I stopped off, went to the hotel. It's interesting because I'm looking. I didn't have any time. I went right from the airport right into the hotel lobby, and as I'm walking, you have to go through the gaming area with all the slot machines and card tables before you get to this gigantic room. And there was a little mirror, and I looked at myself. I said, God, I do not look good. I was running and racing, and my weight was way down. And I had no body fat, and my cheeks were sunken in, and my shirt, it looked like I put on a shirt three sizes too big. I thought, well, what am I going to do? So I ran around the corner, and I changed. I got a little shop, and it was in the area, and I bought a shirt and came back in, and I walk, this guy says, hi, Gary, I'm going to introduce you. And so he goes up and does his introduction. And I'm not paying any attention. I'm just looking at the crowd. And then I walk up there and realize it wasn't a lecture. It was over 10,000 chiropractors had come together to say thank you for helping save the profession, along with those other five chiropractors and a man named McAndrews, who led the legal team out of Chicago. His brother was one of the chiropractors. And it was a very humbling night. And I said to them, look, I'm very appreciative of this acknowledgement. Thank you. But it'll happen again in different ways. Work together. And today, here's my word to the chiropractors. You're under attack again. Not by the AMA. Legally, they can't. They'd be in violation of the court orders. They can't call you an unscientific cult, as they did for decades. They can't stop you from getting insurance through Medicare and Medicaid and your education. But just remember, they can hurt you another way. So guess what's replaced the AMA as the number one attacker of chiropractors today and their patients? Wikipedia. And guess who's working with Wikipedia? Google. And guess what Google owns? YouTube. So guess what has been expunged from YouTube? All pro articles on chiropractic. In fact, one chiropractor up in Canada, I'm going to try to get her on the show, she wrote some interesting articles and posted them about vaccines, and she was correct. I read her material. It was 100% correct. The Chiropractic Association of Canada was so fearful of the backlash of thinking that maybe people will think chiropractic is not establishment that they attacked her. The Chiropractic Association of Canada attacked her, found her guilty, took away her license, and fined her $100,000. $100,000 fine and revocation of her license because she wrote an honest article showing the lack of proper science, credible independent science, on the safety and efficacy of vaccines. That is how powerful the hidden hand of the corporate masters are in this country. Now, I'm going to go after the Chiropractic Association of Canada for being wrong. Whoever made those decisions was maybe misinformed. I'll give them the benefit of a doubt. Maybe intentionally ignorant. She was intentionally educated, like all the parents who have vaccine-injured children and doctors and scientists who look for the truth with intent. So right now, do you think you could get the second largest healing profession in America to join together to fight anything? The answer is no. And it's as if they've forgotten what happened to them at one time, and now they're just into, I guess, helping their patients, making a livelihood for themselves, which they deserve. But boy, they have lost the sense of mission because they're no longer desperate. What does it mean when we forget about the hungry and the homeless, when we have a roof over our head and our bodies are filled? Just a thought. Now, let's say hello to, before we go out, we have Nate from Florida on the line. Nate, your thoughts.
Oh, hi, Gary. Hello?
Go ahead. You're on the air.
Okay, great. Thank you for your show, Gary. I was wondering what you think is the source of the current outbreak of hepatitis A in Florida.
I don't know. I do know that an awful lot of the farming practices are using an enormous amount of chemicals, including glyphosate, still in common use, the most common used pesticide or in the United States, herbicide. So that's a problem. And at the end of it, it's going to be hygiene. It's going to be the quality of washing things. And we might consider this. It's very easy to get hepatitis. All it takes is for someone in a restaurant, for example, to open up one of those containers that says triple washed and eat it without washing it. Never, ever, ever eat anything that's raw until you've washed it. Because you don't know how many hands have touched it. You don't know whether or not that the system of how they cleaned it is getting rid of all of the potential for bacterial infections. And that can be a very common way to spread hepatitis A. Also in restaurants, how hygienic are the restaurants? Are they really autoclaving, or not autoclaving, but are they sterilizing the silverware or the glasses? If you drank in a restaurant that did not sterilize its glassware, you could end up with herpes from someone who had it, and it's that is not off the glass. Even if the glass has been cleaned, you see, we imagine you're really dirty. I mean, you're really dirty. You got grease on you, you got mud, got some stain and paint. Been working all day in a garage, and you went into a shower and you turn on the shower, and you let the water run for 30 seconds, and you stepped out of the shower, dried off. Are you clean, Nate?
Absolutely not.
No. You've got to scrub yourself. Do you realize how many people get infections in hospitals because the nurse or surgeon orderly did not clean under their fingernails, did not clean properly? There's a proper way to clean your hands. You put your cleaning material, never antibacterial soap because it's toxic, but you can put your cleaning material in your hand and you rub it, and then you turn one hand over and you rub your fingers, all your four fingers, in between your other four fingers, and you reverse it. Then you rub underneath the fingernails and you rinse it. When I'm washing vegetables, I will put them into a strainer. I'll put in a veggie wash, and you can make your own with apple cider vinegar or hydrogen peroxide diluted in about 20 to 1 in water, and you spray it. Then you rinse it all. Then you put it into a bowl, and then you fill the bowl up with water, and you agitate it. You agitate with your hand. That is getting those little tiny particles that you might not even see that are enough to cause hepatitis. And it rises up, you rinse it off. You do that three times, then spin it down, then it's clean and ready to eat. And I don't know of a restaurant in America that does that. So that's just one possible theory. Okay, Nate? Thanks for your
Great.
Call.
Thanks.
Appreciate it. Again, what are the problems that we're not dealing with and that we could, the common sense could help us with most of the things that are wrong in life? They're not that difficult to solve, and we're not solving them. We're disguising them. We're becoming distracted from these. We don't want to open up certain doors in our life. We don't want to see things change. We don't want to go through discomfort. Why? That's the question I'm asking you. Our number is 888-874-4888. Now, you have a chance to call in. While you're calling in, we're going to go to Dr. Peter Goetze, because today he's going to tell us his views in a short comment about psychiatry.
This is Peter Goetze. I'm a director of the Nordic Cochrane Center in Copenhagen and professor of research design and analysis at the University of Copenhagen. In January 2014, I wrote an article in a major newspaper in Denmark, which in English would be Psychiatry Gone Astray. And I actually translated it into English later. It's up on some international websites. And in this article, I described 10 myths in psychiatry that psychiatrists use, but which are wrong, and which partly coerce patients into continuing taking drugs that they don't like taking. For example, this hoax about you have a chemical imbalance in your brain, and now we will fix it with a drug, just like diabetes patients get insulin. They use this to persuade the patients to take drugs they would rather not take, and which harms them in the long run. So these psychiatric drugs, some of them may have a beneficial effect in the short term, but they are definitely harmful in the long term, and probably all of them cause permanent brain damage. And also here, the psychiatrists, they use myths because they tell the patients that depression and schizophrenia destroys your brain, so now we will get drug for you that will prevent this brain damage. I have seen these studies. It has never been documented that the disease leads to brain damage, but it has been documented that the drugs cause brain damage. So it's wrong. So I exposed that, and I even concluded that that since the psychiatrists and general practitioners also, they cannot use these drugs that are a double-edged sword that may be beneficial in acute situations, but people become dependent on them, just like on street drugs. So they have difficulty getting off them. So therefore, in the long run, the way these drugs are used today cause more harm than good. So it would be better for us if the drugs didn't exist, because doctors can't handle them. And they tell the patients when they get abstinence symptoms, it's your disease that has come back, which it not often is. It's usually abstinence symptoms. And then they continue for life. So some months later, I became quite unpopular because of this newspaper article. And I was stabbed in the back, you might say, by the whole establishment, including the Minister of Health, about that I could say that it would be better we didn't have the drugs and so on. But everyone overlooked deliberately that that was not what I said in the article. I said we should use these drugs very, very little, and mostly in acute situations and with a plan for tapering them off in order to prevent this long-term harm. I also said that the way we use them today does more harm than good. So then it would be better we didn't have them. But of course, I would prefer that we had them and that doctors were better in using them. So that was a tough time this spring. But now I'm going to a conference in Los Angeles where people share my views that the way we currently use these drugs is harmful. So we are going to discuss how we can create a better psychiatry. Antidepressant drugs are used a lot. In our country, they sell so much, so every Dane can be in treatment for 6 years of their life. Every one of us. This is not healthy. And if you put something in the placebo, which was done in the old days, then there is no effect of antidepressant drugs. So what you measure in these clinical trials is mainly bias, that you think they are blinded, but because of the side effects, dry mouth and so on, many patients and doctors will know, is that patient on active drug or placebo? And then psychologically, we want to be kind. So then if a patient or doctor knows that, yes, that patient is on active drug, then they will tend to exaggerate the benefit and vice versa on placebo. So if you put something in the placebo that gives people dry mouth, so they can't guess what they're on, the effect disappears. And so it can really be doubted whether antidepressant drugs have any effect at all. But what they do is that they make people dependent so that they go on for years. And I have seen data from Finland that people who were put on an antidepressant drugs, even 5 years later, almost half of them were still taking an antidepressant drug. And they also took an antidepressant drug in the intermediate years. So they took it year after year, half of them. And in the old days, psychiatrists said that depression is a self-limiting disease. Even without treatment, most people get better. So quite few cases become chronic. Now the psychiatrists say that depression has changed. It's another disease because now it's more chronic. And what they don't realize is they created this with their drugs. This is insane.
Okay. I would agree. Let me add something on, because I've been 6 years now into doing a documentary that would have been finished, but I put the environmental documentary ahead of it. And there's one scene, I'll just tell you what the scene is. You're going to see a completely healthy, completely normal person, themselves a physician, by the way, young woman, go into 12 of the leading psychiatrist's offices. They're all board certified. Some are professors. They're highly respected. From 2.5 minutes to 6 minutes, and they were given a diagnosis and given a prescription for antipsychiatric medication, and none of them were the same. They all came up with different diagnoses. They all came up with different drugs. Then watch what happens when the psychiatrist comes outside later, and there's a camera, and they're asked, this person was just in your office, they're completely normal, you just diagnosed them in this one case in 2 minutes and 32 seconds after meeting the person, you gave them a diagnosis and a prescription. They're normal. And every one of them said the same thing. Well, it's all subjective. There's really no tests you can take to determine a person's mental well-being. So there is no such thing as a brain chemical imbalance. And they said, that's correct, there's no such thing. Well, if there's no such thing as brain chemical imbalance, and if it's all subjective, then why didn't you just suggest that they go into maybe some psychotherapy, something where they could talk out their issues? No, because then now they've got a patient. And as he was just saying, they got a patient for years. And then, of course, one of the side effects of antidepressant drugs is depression. One of the side effects of antipsychotic medication is psychoses. And guess what? Eric Harris, one of the Columbine shooters, was on. He was normal because we were out there filming everyone to find out what happened. He had been upping his Effexor, and look at the Effexor side effects, homicidal tendencies. And not once has the mainstream media, the medical community, or the American Congress said, let's look at the impact of psychiatric medications, since over 90% of all the mass killers on these medications. That's how powerful an industry is. That's how much influence they have. And so that's just one of the things you got to know. The science is not on their side. They pretend to have science on their side. And anyone who's a real scientist is discouraged and then attacked if they challenge their position. Let's say hello to Fred from Long Island. Hi, Fred. You're on the air.
Yes. Hi, Gary. I'm calling in because I don't know, you probably already know this, but I just wanted to call in just to verify. I found out regarding the vaccine exemption, religious exemption law. I have a friend who is an appellate judge, and I spoke with him on Sunday. And he told me that he would notify me if he heard anything regarding it, and that he told me this morning that Robert F. Kennedy Jr. along with another lawyer are going to be going to the appellate court tomorrow and for a stay to be put in place,
That was done yesterday at 2:00. And we announced it on our show at 12:30, but I appreciate you calling and sharing that information with us. And we added 50 more people to the case yesterday who were listening to the program and who have vaccine concerns, and they are now joining the plaintiffs in that. That was just from yesterday's show, so thank you very much. I appreciate you calling. And by the way, for those of you living in California, we have a very large audience in California. You have one little Napoleonic complex person there. His name is Dr. Pan, and he is personally responsible for getting all of these mandatory vaccines. If you remember, we did the investigative reporting and found the people who voted, yes, we want mandatory vaccines with no exemptions, all received money from the manufacturers of the vaccines. That should have been a major scandal. In and of itself, that should have said, this is a pay-to-play, stop the legislation, and it didn't. And I was about to broadcast their names and amounts of money each had received, because we got every single person who voted and how much they received, and from the pharmaceutical company. And KPFA, the station that loves to censor this self-righteous little group of nitwits as a part of Pacifica, that shouldn't surprise anyone. That's common. And they censored, of course, on free speech radio, you want to make sure you censor. I've never been censored on commercial radio in my life, ABC, WR, only and repeatedly on Pacifica. No surprise there. In any case, they prevented Bonnie Faulkner and I from telling the truth about that, and I imagine that that might have made an impact on people listening to know that these legislators in California had been paid. Also, we had a whole list of the known side effects of the drugs that were going to be mandated. We weren't allowed to present that. So censoring had a consequence there, as it always does. Anyhow, I'm giving you a heads up. Senate Bill 276 was heard in the Assembly Appropriations Committee yesterday, and due to the exorbitant cost, it was sent to the suspense file. And however, the SB 276 could be removed from the suspense file on August 31st and continue to move during this session. And if that happens, there'll be no exemptions whatsoever allowed in California. I mean, none, not religious, not philosophical, nothing. And any doctor all doctors will be stopped from giving it to you. And that means that you'll have no choice. I'd move out of the damn state. I'd move out of the state in any case. But that's just to let you know. Now, what can you do? Several things. First and foremost, send them the articles. Read the articles yourself and send to every state legislature the articles that Richard Gale and I have written. They have all been meticulously researched and referenced, cited, and legally vetted so that they have the truth. Then send them copies of the videos like Vaccine Nation, Deadly Deception, Autism Made in USA, The Silent Epidemic. These are multi-award-winning documentaries with the world's leading authorities showing you the truth about the safety and efficacy of vaccines. Again, we're not telling people not to vaccinate. What we're saying is make sure that before you vaccinate that the vaccine is harmless. And then start a movement. Everyone in America should start a movement, reaching out to your legislators saying repeal the 1986 Indemnification Act that removed all legal responsibility for bad vaccines, harmful effects of vaccines from the manufacturer. And that is how we win the vaccine battle. But to do nothing, sooner or later, listen to what I'm going to tell you. Make note of this, because I know it's happening, because I've already seen the research that's being done. In the very near future, in the next year, they're going to start coming to mandate adults have vaccines. All adults have vaccines, mandatory vaccines, just like children. What are you going to do then if you decided, well, it wasn't important, I decided, you know, I had other things to do. The shopping channel was having a special on, you know, Cher's beaded dress. So I, well, okay. But they're coming. There's too much money to be made. It's a $150 billion a year industry if adults are vaccinated every year. So I would start trying to get that repealed. If we can get that repealed, the entire vaccine industry comes to a screeching halt, because then you can sue the hell out of these bastards for what they've done. It's the biggest health fraud in world history. All right? Now, I'm going to let's see if we have someone else that would... No, we have personal calls. I'm not taking personal calls today. I still haven't gotten a single caller trying to address my larger issue. Why aren't we making positive changes to help ourselves, to help society? Why do we keep doubling down on stupid? If you'd like to address that, the time remaining, please do. 888-874-8888. Now, I'm going to go to one more tape because I think you'll really find this interesting. This week we posted on Monday a brand new article, and it's a really comprehensive article on 5G. And why is this important? Because imagine if this were not 1963 and 64, where the fight against DDT began and ended in 1972. And we have to thank and stand on the shoulders of Rachel Carson, who started the environmental movement. Ralph Nader, gave it the teeth it needed and helped us as the public, we the people, by creating Clean Air Acts. But what if this DDT was just happening today for the first time and we were being told, we got the best thing in the world for you. We're going to spray this everywhere. In fact, we're going to have them on every corner. So when you walk by the corner, just get a spray of DDT because we believe it's so good to prevent disease. And there was no voices suggesting otherwise. Well, 5G is going to irradiate you, and we're going to see a pandemic of disease and death because of it. And by the time it is overwhelmingly destructive, when millions of Americans and a billion people worldwide have been sickened because of it, then it's too late. The industry has been captured by the industry's captured the federal agencies, and nothing will happen. Now's the time to stop it. I'm going to play that clip, but I just want to mention real quick two things. There's going to be a for those of you who are unaware, I have a film that they're going to premiere as a fundraiser for WBAI, our sister station, to help them out. It'll be a fun evening. There'll be questions and answers, and if you'd like to attend that, I'm going to give you a number to call, and it's on the 25th on the Upper West Side of the theater, and call, and you can make a reservation, and all the funds go to WBAI, and you're going to see Deadly Deception, one of the most single, powerful, all-inclusive, really hard-hitting, pull-no-punches look at what vaccines do and the lies we're told and who tells them and the truth from whistleblowers. Multiple whistleblowers are in the film. 516-620-3602. 516-620-3602. Or you can go to give the numeral to WBI.org. Give to WBI.org. And tickets are going to go, and it'll be a wonderful evening. But also, I'm going to be on a Sunday going out, as I do with every one of my films, because I really respect what they're doing at the Huntington Arts Cinema, and I'm premiering a different film out there on the 28th. Let me give you the number to call to make a reservation, especially those of you who live out around Huntington or on Long Island. You won't want to miss this. There'll be a lecture afterward, the film. There's a film, then a lecture on reversing the aging process, a lecture I have not done in New York, and I've just finished creating it. I did it on a webinar, but this is going to be interesting. Call 631-423-7610, 631-423-7610. Again, that's for the Huntington Arts Cinema, a different film, not the BAI fundraiser, and it's a premiere. One day only, one showing only, 631-423-7610. Also, I'm going to be doing a health support group for 4 Sundays in New York, and there's 2 groups. Keep them separate. One group is going to deal with arthritis, diabetes, fatigue, and insomnia. Now, for arthritis and diabetes, you have to have some health professional's letter proving you have these conditions. It's a lifestyle and behavior modification support group. Following that immediately is a different group dealing with depression, loneliness, sadness, loss of interest in life, apathy, a sense of being just lost. And you can call 646-926-5459. 646-926-5459. We had enough people yesterday to fill up the groups, but when he was telling me who the people were calling, it's not for me to be helping people with their personal health conditions. That it's helping understand how to reverse these conditions and regain a sense of life. That said, I hope to see you there. Now, we're going to finish the program today by listening to U.S. Senator Blumenthal raise concern about 5G wireless technology just a few months ago in a Senate hearing, and nobody said from the pro industry that there was any research being done.
technology. It promises to bring us a new era of connectivity with internet speeds as much as 5 times faster than what we have today with much lower latency, and that's all a good thing. But 5G, as you well know, also uses higher frequency waves that don't travel as far and will rely on a network of hundreds of thousands, potentially millions of small cell sites. And the question then is, are there any health implications, any public safety implications to those additional sites that are likely to be located close to homes, schools, workplaces, and closer to the ground? Correct?
Correct, Senator. Yes.
So in December of 2018, I sent a letter to FCC Commissioner Carr asking him to cite for me recent scientific studies demonstrating the safety of this technology. What research has been done? Where has it been published and compiled? He has essentially failed to do so and just echoed the general statements of the FDA, which shares regulatory responsibility for cell phones with the FCC. If you go to the FDA website, pretty unsatisfactory. There basically is a cursory and superficial citation to existing scientific data saying, quote, the FDA has urged the cell phone industry to take a number of steps, including support additional research on possible biological effects of radio frequency fields for the type of signal emitted by cell phones. I believe that Americans deserve to know what the health effects are, not to prejudge what scientific studies may show, and they deserve also a commitment to do the research on outstanding questions. So my question for you, particularly Mr. Gillen and Mr. Perry, how much money has the industry committed to supporting additional independent research? I stress independent research. Is that independent research ongoing? Has any been completed? Where can consumers look for it? And we're talking about research on the biological effects of this new technology.
Thank you, Senator. Thank you for your focus on the issue. Safety is paramount, and as you alluded to, we rely on the expert agencies, we rely on the findings of the FDA and others as to the requirements to keep all of us safe. There are no industry-backed studies, to my knowledge, right now. Happy to visit with you as to what opportunities you think there needs to be more studies, and we're always for
okay.
more science.
Okay, here's what's wrong with this. There were 10,000 studies in the peer-reviewed literature, in the Library of Medicine, in the National Academy of Sciences, all this with 26,000 scientists signing a letter saying don't use 5G, and yet, unfortunately, not a single mention was this in the entire hearing that we had all this already proven independent science. What he was alluding to was the industry, and the industry hasn't done any nor spent a penny, and then this guy was so disingenuous representing the entire telecom industry. He said, well, we rely upon the FDA. The FDA doesn't do any studies. The FDA then says to the industry, do a study and let us see it. And then people who are pro-industry sit on the FDA advisory boards and approve the study. It is a circular firing squad. It is insane. We expose this, read the article on 5G and its devastating consequence. Thank you all for listening and have a nice day.